Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me post-election.
Post-Chicago mayoral election.
As we speak, there are still some counts going on of aldermanic races. Some nursing homes have not weighed in yet.
Yeah.
Speaking of elections, today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on April 16th, 2015, titled Voters Pushed Mayor Rahm to the Left.
Yes.
Will he stay there?
No.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
I know.
You describe 4 years of political evolution of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, whom you describe as having genuinely moved to the left as opposed to just giving the appearance of moving, and that results from the clear unpopularity of his policies. So you just said no. You know, I'm reading this article and I'm waiting for you to pull the rug out. I'm waiting for you to say, don't be fooled, Chicago, but you don't say it.
No.
You say, quote, I'm starting to think he may actually have seen the light,
yeah.
Unquote. Now you're singing a different tune?
Yeah, I'm constantly singing many different tunes at once. Mayor Rahm has clearly, over the last year, moved left, if only in rhetoric, and in some cases, actions and deeds, to prepare himself for the reelection. He's ruling differently than he did in those first 2.5 years, where he was flying the flag of privatization, charter schools, threw the TIF money at Marriott, DePaul.
This is what you've called in the past, he's less Rahm-like.
Rahm-like, yeah. So not only did he do the cosmetic adjustments, like putting on the sweater and trying not to snarl.
The Mr. Rogers treatment, I call it.
Refrain from, you know, cussing out Karen Lewis. But there was also a bit of a change on, for lack of a better word, the ideological front in terms of the legislation he was advancing or not advancing.
Would you even say policy?
Policy, that's a better word. Thank you. I just wanted to take a moment here to tell all the lefties and progressives and liberals, whatever they're called, who might have been upset and crying in their beer, like myself, that, you know, maybe it was not all for naught, that maybe we actually achieved something in this city, and that we got this very hard-headed, stubborn right-winger from the Democratic side to move left. Then that raised a topic that I had never addressed in a column before that I've always wanted to address, and that is whether Rahm is a legitimate ideologue or is just in it for whatever he can get at that very moment. He undergoes these occasional evolutions. We've seen it on something, for instance, like gun control, where now as mayor of Chicago, he's a supporter of gun control. But as you recall, when he was chief of staff in the White House, he was telling Eric Holder, the Justice Department head, to stop pushing this issue because it's going to hurt us. Same thing within the immigrant rights movement, you know, a citizen movement. Go back to the Clinton White House, gay rights. He was in the Clintons with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This is a guy who's not afraid to
put his finger into the wind.
Yeah, thank you. And when he sees it as his best interest to take a stand, he takes that stand, even if it means contradicting the stand he was taking before. So the issues I described are more what they call it social issues. So would he be willing to take a stand on an economic issue, such as like minimum wage? Well, he did. He was the one who pushed the minimum wage bill. I don't think it went enough, but it was more than anybody else had done. So how far will he be willing to go with this? Will he tell his charter school cronies, sorry, boys, your time has come and we're putting a cap on this? He's held back on charter school expansion for the last year or so. Will he continue? Or will he, you know, just go back to his old ways? I don't know. We'll see. Within the first week, he'd already reached out to Karen Lewis, the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, to make a peace overture, presumably to get a contract settled so there's not another strike. I would guess that Karen Lewis is going to insist on some kind of cap on charter schools as we go forward. What I just wanted to get out there was this notion that maybe there had been an impact by the opposition. It was very disappointing on election night. I was very disappointed that it was such a resounding victory for Rahm. But then I thought about it. I was like, well, most people aren't paying attention to anything anyway. So they wake up and the eve of the election and they have two images in their head. One is Rahm in the sweater and various union people supporting him. There was a very effective campaign. Remember Rahm Love, which was put out there.
That's more of the sweater persuasion.
Yeah. Well, again, I would say that most people in Chicago are not paying attention to anything that goes on unless it directly impacts them. So when it comes to the mayoral election, they start paying attention in about February.
So two images. One is the sweater. What's the other one?
The second image, which is probably the one that helped them the most on the north side, was embedded in Senator Mark Kirk's statement that Chicago will become Detroit if Rahm's not elected. The north side liberals, they're not even liberals anymore. I don't know what we call them, but Northside white people were going to vote for Rahm in large numbers. But the stampede began, I think, once the D word was dropped, Detroit, and he got 83% or 84%. So those, you know, Mr. Rogers and Detroit brought home the bacon for him, plus all the problems. The problems in Chuy Garcia's campaign and the negative campaigning that Rahm did very successfully brought home a big victory that left me rather down on election night. You saw me on election night, so you know. And then I just started thinking about it and was like, well, you know, he has moved left a bit. Now, is it going to be permanent? I don't know. I mean, it seems his leftward, if you call it leftward drift on gay rights, is permanent. You know, he sees that in his best interest now. He didn't in the 1990s. He sees it in his best interest right now to be a stalwart for gun control. He didn't as recently as 2010 or 2009. He didn't see the citizen reform movement, whatever you want to call it, as in his best interest as recently as, gosh, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Now he does. So maybe he sees economic justice, if that's what you want to call it, as in his best interest.
Well, that's a good question, right? Because you're talking mostly here about social issues, but the administration is still left us with a pretty long list of things that are, some argue, as devastating to Chicago as anything could be. And I'll list some of them. For example, using long-term loans to pay operating expenses, using fiscally unsound financial products to fund pre-K and schools generally, actually, an economically and racially segregated school system, a police force that causes annual multi-million dollar payouts for brutality claims, hiding details of tax income and financing obligations, alleged obligations, and so on. So some might characterize what you're saying in your articles, we're still in critical condition, even though the beatings lightened up.
That's a great list. I've come to recognize a lot of things on that list don't fit into the conventional spectrum of left versus right. For instance, some of those things like the games he plays with finances, borrowing money today to pay for bills. As a leftist, I would advocate that. And, you know, times are hard. We can't have money. We don't want to cut. So maybe it is a better idea to borrow now and then pay it back later. More to the point, he won't come up with a source of revenue that's like a progressive source of revenue, like progressive tax, income tax or something like that. He doesn't advocate for that. He's not looking to legalize marijuana and tax the hell of it. So will he move that far left? I can't see it happening, you know what I'm saying, unless there's tremendous pressure applied to him. I don't see that happening. But borrowing money to pay bills as opposed to cutting services, I think in its own way is sort of a, I don't know, I'd call it left, but it's the kind of thing that Paul Krugman says we should never do in a recession is to cut. We should try to spend our way out of it. Mayor Daley kind of subscribed in his own way to that notion. He wanted the good times to go as long as he can make them go. And so he came up with these insane ways of financing, like selling the. But it's the same thing. He didn't want to cut. So that instinct, I would say that's evidence of him not wanting to make these cuts that he made in the first 2 years where he's trying to privatize city services in the name of saying the scams and the schemes that he came up with, like to fund pre-K programs by giving these outrageously
social impact bombs.
Yeah, some social impact bomb. You're absolutely correct. That's just a straight out handout corporate welfare. I don't think he's going to stop doing that. I think that's the gravy, you know, it goes to his pals. Moreover, somehow or other in Chicago, that gets written off as reform.
It's really good marketing.
Yeah, it's good marketing. But people on the left have to keep pushing that. You can't drop that. That's what I'm saying, you know. It'll be a little more difficult for him to come up with another scam like that. And I do believe that he has held off on TIF giveaways. He's definitely not transparent. But again, I'm about the only guy in Chicago who cares about TIF transparency, you know.
There is some groundswell for transparency, largely to your effort.
Well, thank you. And I would say this. When you think of the universe of flaws in the Chicago TIF program, I would say at the top of the list, the one thing that people understand, and it's really hard to get to Chicagoans, but I think we have successfully gotten this to them, is that there is a handout that goes on. That's a form of corporate subsidy. It was particularly prevalent under Mayor Daley and to a degree under Mayor Rahm. Again, he started off with that. He gave the handout to those developers on the banks of the Chicago River in the blighted River West community. He gave the handout to Marriott and DePaul in the blighted South Loop community. He gave a handout to Mariano's in the blighted Greektown community. People catch on to that. They don't like that. They think that's unfair and a waste. Since DePaul, which is a huge travesty, I think, the DePaul deal, the Marriott, you got to think of it as both, he's held back. So now, has he truly seen the light and come to realize that we should not be giving away TIF money to developers who don't need it or corporations who don't need it? I don't know the answer. I know he hasn't done it in about a year, you know, since the DePaul debacle. These are all evidence that he's changed to a certain degree from what he was those first 2 years. I follow de Blasio in New York as a comparison. I can't see that much difference between what de Blasio has done in his first year and what Mayor Rahm has done in his last year in office. I know that's sacrilege to many people because de Blasio is viewed as this great champion of progressive urbanism or whatever we call it. But think about it this way. De Blasio came in talking about putting a cap on charters and holding back on that movement. And then he had a retreat on that issue because the blowback was so strong from the charter school community in New York. Mayor Rahm had the reverse. He came in talking about creating more charters. He talked about how charters were doing such a great job, even though the evidence is that they're not. And then for the last year or so, he's kind of had a retreat. Now, where de Blasio go, where will Rahm go on that one particular issue, I don't know. But I think it's an interesting contrast.
Perhaps an indication came 3 days after the election, the April election. Mayor Emanuel hosted a conference call to which he invited campaign donors and other supporters. Emanuel reportedly asked his supporters, rather than, quote, high-five each other and get a cup of coffee, end quote, to give the mayor their continued political support. Emanuel reportedly said, quote, your voices can't be quieted and put to the side. Stay engaged so what we build politically in the last 6 weeks stays activated around issues, end quote. Presumably, many of the people to whom Emanuel was speaking helped him raise the $26 million or so in campaign funds that you and Mick Dumke.
You mean the great Mick Dumke?
That very one. Wrote about in an article that appeared in The Reader on April 9, 2015, titled, In Reelecting Rahm, the People and $26 Million Have Spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had to name a few issues on which these supporters will want to, in Rahm's words, stay activated, what might they be?
One of the top lists would be the charter school movement, because that's a way, really, the charter school is just a way of undercutting the teachers' union. So to me, that's all it's been about for like the Bruce Rauners of the world. So that would be one obvious one. See, here it gets complicated. By supporters, do you mean the rich people who gave them the money, or do you mean the 58% of the black boards who gave them their votes? Rahm owes his election to both.
Well, I'm thinking of the people that you described in your article as the well-to-do, investment bankers, hedge fund managers, Hollywood moguls.
The Hollywood moguls are interesting. I don't know what they're trying to.
All right, let's set them aside for a moment.
Set them aside for a moment.
The George Lucases.
Yeah, they may be actually more sympathetic to Karen Lewis's worldview than they are to Rahm's, but who knows what the connection is, the nexus that got them to Rahm. But take a look at this one. Bruce Rauner wants to put right-to-work zones in poor neighborhoods throughout the state where you could cripple unions and get people to work for less, all in the name of creating jobs.
To clarify for our listeners, right-to-work states that have passed laws in which workers who are working for a company that has a collective bargaining agreement with a union can opt out of paying union dues.
That is correct. So if a company moves into a poor neighborhood like, say, Englewood or Lawndale or Roseland, their workers would get less money, less union protection, less benefits in the name of having a job. And that's considered economic development. I don't know if Mayor Rahm would have signed on to something like that 2012, circa 2012. My guess is he might. That wasn't a proposal on the table back then. But I know in 2015...
He's clearly against it.
He's against it.
Adamantly.
Yeah, and he had the city council pass a resolution being against it. He's spoken out in favor of collective bargaining rights of municipal employees and state employees. Another position he's at odds with, Bruce Rauner. So if you view those hedge fund guys who gave Rahm the money as Bruce Rauner guys, Rahm's already at odds with them on several pretty important issues. Again, how long he stays at odds with them, I can't predict. It won't happen if the left in this town gives up. I don't see that happening, but you got to keep pushing him because, again, this is a guy, as you said, who's got his finger in the air to see which way the wind's blowing, see what's in his best interest. That was my central point in this column, that I don't think has a fixed ideology. He's not a man with fixed political beliefs. He's other than his own self-interests.
He's not a Scott Walker.
He's not a Scott Walker, no. And he's not a Bruce Rauner. I think that's clear.
It'd be interesting to see whether the issues and the candidacies that activated citizen movements for the election will persist, or whether, as Chomsky points out, often happens, people will just say, well, wait till I have to vote again. And we'll ask, well, how come we can't have any kind of change?
The great Chomsky. And it's not even the election that, when I look at the public in Chicago, the electorate in Chicago, in all their glory, they move right. In my humble opinion, they were more outspoken like in 2012. Think about it. Think about the opposition to NATO, the NATO summit, the opposition around the school strike, protests over his school cuts and his longer day ultimatums without financing. When provoked by these cuts, I think the public in Chicago shows that it is a kind of a liberal or leftist or whatever you want to call it. I hate to use the word progressive.
But willing to stand up for their interests if they're threatened.
Well, they're quick to make accommodations. They're easily manipulated with glossy commercials.
Bright, shiny objects.
Yes. It's easy to get them scared. All you got to do is mention the word Detroit, and the north side of Chicago is like running for the hills.
That's not unique to Chicago.
Yes, you're correct. It's not just Chicago, but it's particularly strong in Chicago. Now, is it stronger in Chicago than it is, say, in Cleveland? I don't know, having never studied Cleveland. Do you think it's stronger in Chicago than it is in other cities? The fear, the intimidation.
Well, when I look at how national policies are carved out and how the electorate is both scared and pandered to,
yeah.
Just looking from a national perspective, it seems that Chicago is not unique. Now, if you take individual cities, those probably deviate significantly. For example, the voters in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. So do you think I'm unfair to Chicago voters, Dave? After all these years, I call them dumb.
No, I'm just saying that.
What do I call them? Dumb, stupid.
Stupid, yeah that's...
Remember the guy wrote in?
The listener.
God bless you, by the way, for listening. So you don't think I've been unfair to them by calling them dumb, stupid, and easily manipulated?
What I think is unfair is to say that they're unique.
Okay. Well, they're unique in their own way. They do it. There's this particular Chicago
well, of
way
course,
of
there
doing
is a Chicago
it.
Way.
You know what I mean? There is a, like, you give them a garbage can, they're so happy. I don't know if anybody elsewhere loves a garbage can or a paved street. I have to say, yesterday, on a total tangent here, my favorite subject, streets in Chicago, because I bike a lot, as you know. Which streets did I notice? Oh, Lincoln Avenue has been paved relatively recently.
Before or after the election?
Well, it was before the election. I'm sure they'll all crumble within the next 3 years. But Chicagoans are so thrilled when that happens. They're like, oh my God, my street was paved. And this is my current obsession, my crusade against Chicagoans about people in the 43rd Ward, which is Lincoln Park, which I've now convinced is the most pathetic contingent of voters in the city of Chicago, because they weren't just motivated by the Detroit campaign. They went wholeheartedly for Rahm, 83%. But in their aldermanic runoff, they chose the incumbent, Michelle Smith, largely, as far as I could tell, because she was willing to basically pledge that she'd be a rubber stamp for the mayor. So it's like they were even afraid that if they elect somebody who's mildly independent, who might occasionally vote against the mayor, that would be the road to Detroit. Their ward was the heart of that Lincoln Avenue that I always complain about, mm-hmm. Terribly unpaved, goes right through the 43rd Ward. It was horrendous conditions. What have they gotten for their subservience? You know what I'm saying?
They got it paved.
Yeah. Well, I got mine paved too. I'm not subservient to the mayor. You know what I mean? It's not like they could figure out a way not to pave huge chunks of the city.
So the successors to Rahm are studying the 43rd Ward perhaps as a template in what to do with the rest of the city.
I guess. But I mean, Lincoln Avenue has pretty much been paved, and it goes through many different wards. Scott Wagersback's ward has been paved. Damon's looking pretty good these days. So the point is, subservience gets you nothing but subservience.
Roland Burris can put that on his tomb.
I don't even know what that means.
Ben, that's all we have time for. Thanks for joining me today.
Take care.
Listeners, we welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions for future interviews. You can get in touch with us via Facebook and Twitter by searching for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening.